All right, we are live here with a Schloss rant from the Philadelphia suburbs. It is July 27th, and we're going to get into a couple of different topics within Major League Baseball and, of course, within the National Football League. So the first topic, this was something I wanted to get to on the last episode, and we kind of just ran out of time. We mentioned it. We teased it. But now, 2 days later, we're going to pay off the tease, and that is Shohei Ohtani. And the big news that came down earlier today is that Shohei Ohtani would not be traded. He goes out there, and in a doubleheader against the Tigers, he pitches a complete game shutout in the first game, then he mashes in two home runs in the next game. But the individual games aren't really the story. The story on a whole is that the Angels have kind of leaked out there through various sources like Tom Verducci that Ohtani is not going to be traded. Now, I look at this in a couple of different ways. Number one is it shows that the Angels really want to prove to Ohtani that they can try to contend as they get back into the wild card race, even though they have several teams in front of them, including the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, the Tampa Bay Rays, not the Orioles anymore. And the other thing it really shows me is that they want to see, and they have a good feeling that if Mike Trout comes back from his injury, and he really in recent years has really been injured, if he comes back, they're willing to say, all right, we've got this dynamic punch again. We've got the best two or the only two-way player in the sport, but a guy who's doing amazing things on both sides with Ohtani. And we've got Mike Trout, who's this amazing offensive player as well. And honestly, it kind of makes sense if you're the Angels to not trade him, because realistically, the return just is not fair. It's not going to match up for the player that Shohei Ohtani is because of what he's able to do pitching and what he's able to do hitting. And the team that'd be trading for him, they know he's going to free agency anyway, so it's not like you're going to get some type of big prospects back. And I think at least if you're Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, you keep him, and at least you're not the guy who traded him, so you're not going to get booed. And you continue to make the money on the games that he starts. And also, if you're the Angels, maybe you do get back into this thing. Maybe you do contend somehow, some way, and you get one of these wild card spots. Now, if I was Ohtani, there's no way that I'm re-signing with the Angels, point blank. In my opening MLB rant of the season, where I kind of gave a season prediction, I talked about the Angels and the just absolute dumpster fire that organization is, how its baseball witness protection program. This is not a team that cheaps out in any way, shape, or form. This is not like a big market team, which they are. They're in Orange County outside of LA. This is not like a big market team that just refuses to spend like the old Wilpon-owned Mets, the Coupons, as a lot of people call them. This is a team that's just snake-bitten with every big-time free agent that they go all in on, whether it be Albert Pujols underperforming, not always staying healthy, whether it be Anthony Rendon, who's done absolutely nothing, when that was a guy who was like one of the best right-handed hitters in the sport when he finished up his Nationals tenure, winning a championship after 2019, whether it be Josh Hamilton and all the stuff that went on with him, whether it be even signing guys like C.J. Wilson, the pitcher, to big-time deals, Jeff Weaver, the pitcher, just kind of like flaming out, only topping out at 82 miles an hour with his fastball towards the end. Trout, this humongous deal. He can't stay on the field. Point being, they spend money. They're not afraid to do that, but just nothing ever works out for the team. And I understand Ohtani's a West Coast guy, and everyone's talked about all the different West Coast teams that he should go to. To me, the answer is pretty obvious. He's got to go to the Dodgers if he wants to win. Sure, the Giants have shown you, you know, about 10 years ago or so, give or take, that they're able to win multiple championships. But times have changed. They don't have that pitching staff anymore to back him up. People have mentioned the Mariners as well because it's also on the West Coast. He'd have a nice, you know, dynamic player like Julio Rodriguez there. And we know the pitching's there with guys like George Kirby, but and Luis Castillo as well in the rotation. But if I'm Ohtani, I'm not going to the Seattle Mariners. I'm going to the Dodgers. There's no way that he shouldn't. And the Dodgers, if you think about it, they've cut back on some of the players by not bringing them back. They didn't bring back Justin Turner. They didn't bring back a guy who they would have spent a little more on in Corey Seager. So they are under the luxury tax threshold this year, and they're kind of hanging in there in first place. It's not like a dominant Dodger team that we've seen in the past, but if you're Ohtani, you should go to the Dodgers when free agency, you know, settles, when the dust clears, so to speak, because it'll give him a good chance to win. He stays on the West Coast. He'll have other players around him, specifically in the pitching staff. You have to figure Kershaw will still be there, Walker Buehler, and I know that those guys are out right now, and you have to figure Urias will be there too. So you've got support from the pitching staff, and it gives you the best chance to win because this Angel team, they're snake bitten. They can't do anything right. I mean, even with Ohtani and Trout healthy, they don't make the playoffs. So it makes sense if you are Ohtani, that even though he's going to finish out the year here with the Angels, even though I like the fact that the Angels aren't trading him, that you go and take your services somewhere else to a team that'll be able to put a winner around you. Because I just think the Angels, they're just not capable of doing it. They don't develop the players that help, you know, make things go and put him in the good spot to win championships. Because clearly, with the fall out of that World Baseball Classic and how competitive he was, how much he enjoyed winning, it's because he hasn't been in a postseason game. So how can you blame him? And that's because the Angels team just does not do enough to support him. All right, another baseball topic before we get into the football here. Not sure if you all saw this, but there was a viral clip that hit the internet of Joey Votto on the MLB Network show High Heat, which one of my favorite guys in sports talk, Christopher Mad Dog Russo, you heard me pretty much mention him in each one of the now 32 episodes of the Schloss Rant podcast. Him and his co-host Alana Rizzo, they were interviewing him. And Joey Votto kind of leans into him saying like, oh, you don't think I belong in the Hall of Fame when it's all said and done because I'm a mid-market guy. And he says something to the effect of not everyone could be a big shot Madison Avenue radio and TV star with ESPN and SiriusXM. And, you know, the last podcast that I did, I talked about different guys who should be in the Hall of Fame and how Scott Rolen, who was a teammate of his, I believe, at the end of his career, shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, even though he's in there. So that led me to think about Joey Votto and whether or not he should be in the Hall of Fame. And with Joey Votto, the case is interesting because he's not a pure power hitter from the first base standpoint, but he had multiple years which he hit 30 home runs. The big thing that's going for him is that in his career thus far, he's a .411 on base percentage guy with a .513 slugging, which puts him at .924 OPS. Those numbers right there, along with over 300 home runs, he's at 350 exactly. Again, not a big-time power guy, but a guy who could definitely hit for some power. I think those numbers there are going to put him in. I know that people look at, you know, black type on the baseball card or on the baseball reference page, the bold typeface, you know, where the numbers are pointing out. And what he leads the categories he leads the league in most often, they're walks and on base percentage. He had 1 year in which he led the league in slugging percentage, 2 years leading the league in OPS. This is a really good baseball player overall. And again, I keep jumping back to Harold Baines, and I know he was put in by that veteran committee, but if you're going to put a guy in like that, you have to put Joey Votto in. And the closest comparison of a guy that's in the Hall of Fame who was voted on, you know, the natural way was Edgar Martinez. And the only thing Votto has on him career-wise, I should say, is he's got more home runs, but they both have similar numbers in terms of OPS, in terms of on-base percentage. And, you know, first base, I understand he's not a power hitter, Joey Votto, necessarily, but I think you should put him in just based on that Harold Baines level. And, again, based on the fact that he's comparable to Edgar Martinez. And another player that he mentions in that little interview with Mad Dog Russo, he mentions Zach Greinke as well. So a guy that's in the Hall of Fame that there was some debate amongst the time once he got in was Jack Morris. And the reason for Jack Morris, I mean, this guy had a 3.9 ERA for his career. Greinke's got him beat in every category except for innings pitched. He has a way higher WAR. And again, I'm not the biggest fan of WAR, but he pitched in more. He started more games. He's got, I guess he has a better winning percentage. He's got 30 less wins than Zach Morris. But to me, wins is not the end-all be-all, especially since Greinke spent so much of his career on bad Kansas City teams and, you know, bad Arizona teams a little bit there. Not so much, but, you know, he was on a bunch of years where he was on bad teams. He's got more strikeouts, way higher percentage of batters that he struck out, way less walks. I mean, the walks, Greinke only walked 754 guys compared to Morris, 1390. I mean, yeah, Morris won four championships, but baseball's really not a sport where we ever look at, oh, they never won a ring, so it didn't matter. I mean, Ted Williams, back in the day, you know, 80 years ago, whatever it was, 70 years ago, he's pretty much considered one of the best left-handed hitters of all time. Didn't win a championship, so I can't look at championships. Jack Morris is in the Hall of Fame. So, Greinke, another guy who should get the call eventually because he beats Jack Morris in every single statistical category. And I really bring up this spot not just to do the Hall of Fame, but I think this is something that's underrated. I think a lot of people who do content, whether it be YouTube or they do podcasts like this one, I think that people are afraid to kind of like have some fun. And if you watch the video, Doggy is just laughing as Votto kind of like, you know, pulls at him a little bit tongue in cheek and kind of, you know, makes fun of him for being like a, you know, Madison Avenue, hoity-toity, fancy guy with the pocket squares. And I think it's important when you do this stuff, especially when it's about sports, to make sure you're having fun. Make sure you're not taking yourself too serious. And I think Dog does a really good job. If you search up the video, I'm sure that you would agree. All right, the next topic here, and we're going to switch to the National Football League because I said in the last podcast we're going to be doing a lot more football-related topics because it's July 27th. All the teams are in camp. Hopefully I'll be out at Giants camp next Thursday up there in East Rutherford watching the Giants practice as the Giants look to get back to the playoffs for the second straight year. But I'm watching that Netflix documentary on the quarterbacks that came out about 2 weeks ago or so. And honestly, it's kind of boring. I don't like that I'm going back and I'm seeing stuff from last year. And, you know, it's about Marcus Mariota, Kirk Cousins, and Patrick Mahomes. But the one thing with Patrick Mahomes that I bring up that's interesting that I didn't quite understand is that this guy's competitive spirit really shines through in the beginning of this documentary. You know he's amazing. You know he can make any throw on the field. You know his voice kind of sounds funny too, but he's like an interesting guy. It's like kind of addicting listening to him talk just because it's so unique. But this guy's competitive spirit absolutely shines through, and it wasn't really something I was aware of. I just thought that this guy was just like naturally amazing, and not to knock him really in any way, shape, or form, but like it's just his competitiveness was never talked about in terms of guys like Tom Brady, who's, you know, always doing the let's go, pumping up the teammates. Him on the sidelines, all this footage that I probably never focused on, Patrick Mahomes, that is, he's pumping up his guys just as much. So it was nice to see there. And I understand people knock like his sibling and his spouse, and just like, I'm not about that. Like, I'm more interested in what this guy does on the field. Seemingly, Patrick Mahomes is like a perfect guy off the field too. Seemingly a good dad, good husband, all that. So like, no reason to even go into the other stuff. And honestly, as much as I don't love the documentary, watching some of the angles that Mahomes takes with his throws and how much he really moves around the pocket, it's just even more, it's mind-blowing. And it's maybe it's just the fact that I'm watching it in July and we haven't seen this guy play since February, but his talents really, I mean, just shine. And I really think, and I'm not just exaggerating here, I really think this guy's got a chance to be better than Tom Brady when it's all said and done. I think he's already within the top 10 quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League. He's not even that big of a guy. I mean, like, you think about, like, Tom Brady. He's physically imposing, 6'4", 6'5". Peyton Manning, same thing. Mahomes is, like, 6'2". And, I mean, his athleticism obviously is there, and that's really what helps him make all these throws. but it's just he's different. He's just different. Watching him on that screen in this documentary, he's different. The documentary itself leaves a lot to be desired. I mean, it's just I can't be watching game tape of games that I already know what happened. The storylines really aren't that interesting, but they do an amazing job of just highlighting and showing how amazing Patrick Mahomes is. And the next Patrick Mahomes related note, not necessarily about the documentary, is with all these quarterback new deals like Lamar Jackson and then now Justin Herbert, and Burrow is, of course, due for one as well. Mahomes is going to end up being like the eighth or ninth highest paid quarterback. He's underpaid, point blank. That guy changes the direction of the Chiefs franchise historically and on a year-to-year basis. So he's just underpaid. And sure, he can argue his teammates, his agent, his family, whatever the case might be, that he's underpaid. But at a certain point, and I'm not here to get in anyone's pocket, but at a certain point, the money is the money. The money's good. What you're getting, $45 million a year versus $52 million a year, it's probably not going to change that much of the way that you live your life and your lifestyle. Sure, it'd be less left over when your time on this earth is done. But there's a thing that Mahomes is chasing, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, that you cannot, under any circumstances, put a price on. And the one thing that you cannot put a price on is being the GOAT, the undisputed GOAT, the best football player of all time. And right now, it's Tom Brady for the most part. I mean, like people want to say maybe Lawrence Taylor or Jerry Rice, but it's Tom Brady. Let's be real, even I'll admit that, being Mr. New York Giant. That's something you can't put a price on. And by maybe taking a little less, not like threatening to hold out because you're not the highest paid quarterback, not the highest paid football player, which he should be, you're giving your team a little more flexibility to bring in some guys as needed to get you ultimately to be the number one GOAT and the absolutely undisputed best football player of all time. And you can't put a price on that. There's no way, no how that you can put a price on that. So when it's all said and done, everyone will be talking about Patrick Mahomes as the GOAT. And I really think he's got a chance to maybe get to that seven rings, if not above, compared to Tom Brady if he wants to play this long. And I understand what really makes Mahomes amazing is not just the pocket throwing, but the ability to kind of like step outside of the pocket to make throws. Yes, he can scramble. Yes, he can tuck his head down, run, pick up a first down if it's third and seven and no one's open. But I think that if he continues to get better, and I already know he's at an ungodly level, but if he continues to get better, he's got a chance to catch Brady. Little sip of water there. All right. Last topic here. And the last thing we're going to talk about here is Sean Payton ripping Nathaniel Hackett, basically saying that last year was like one of the biggest disgraces of all time. And the coaching job that Nathaniel Hackett did last year with the Broncos. Of course, he didn't even finish the year. But basically, I think that he's doing this, and I'm trying to get the exact quote. He's saying, "Everything I heard about last season, we're doing the opposite. Might have been one of the worst coaching jobs in the history of the NFL." There you go. He's not hiding, you know, under any circumstances, not trying to duck out from the criticism of Nathaniel Hackett, who's, of course, now with the Jets. But I think that Sean Payton's doing this for two reasons. Number one is he's trying to pump up his quarterback. He's trying to kind of deflect any and all blame away from him, saying like, "Look, Russ, you couldn't have succeeded. The organization was a joke by bringing that guy in to be the co being, let's try that again, bringing that guy in to be the coach of your team." And I think that he's doing that really to get on his good side. Kind of just also remind Russell Wilson through the media that this year is a new year. It's a refresh. It's a restart. This is really the second, you know, back nine of your career, so to speak, now that Sean Payton's here and now that Nathaniel Hackett's not there. Just don't even count it. So, really, essentially, he's going from Pete Carroll as his coach, blanking out that Nathaniel Hackett year to now Sean Payton's there to help Russell Wilson and see what they can do. And we know that they're going to have a big time challenge in that division. Second reason he's doing this is because, and I had to double check this, The GM of the New Orleans Saints is a guy by the name of George Payton, spelled differently than Sean Payton, but pronounced the same. George Payton, who I was stunned that this guy was brought in 2021, and after the Nathaniel Hackett hiring and then subsequent firing, was allowed to stay on. Because to me, if you make that big of a mistake, where this coach is so bad at time management, we all remember that opening game against Russell Wilson's former Seattle Seahawks team on Monday night. I was stunned that he was able to come back and then pick the next head coach. So I think that Sean Payton's making these quotes because he threw the whole administration for the Broncos under the bus. I think he's trying to get control of player personnel somehow, some way, or have more of a say in picking the players, whether it be through the draft, free agency, something like, you know, which some of these coaches have had essentially jobs like this before. Bill Belichick has it right now. Back in the day, I think Mike Holmgren maybe with the Seahawks had it. Bill O'Brien has had it with the Texans, even though he was horrible with the player personnel side, even though he's a pretty good coach. But Sean Payton, I think, is going for that. And he had a GM with him in Mickey Loomis when he was with the Saints. But I think he's going for that, trying to get this George Payton out from under him so he can have absolute and supreme control of the team. And I think that another thing, another little angle here we can take with these Sean Payton remarks is, a lot of times people, whether it be the media or fans, they kind of critique players and coaches and management for speaking up, but then they also complain when they don't speak their mind. Sean Payton's absolutely speaking his mind here. I think he has reasons for doing this, reasons for speaking this to a reporter. I think the guy's with the USA Today. But I think that he's genuinely speaking his mind. He's communicating it to the reporter and then thus getting it out to the fans and podcasters and YouTubers, everyone out there. But I think that's genuinely how he feels, that the Broncos totally screwed up Russell Wilson last year and it shouldn't have gone down like this. And he's not afraid to say what's on his mind. He did a good job. He'd go on with Colin Cowherd every Monday last year during the football season. I thought he was amazing at that too. So if this Broncos thing doesn't work out, I think someone will bring him back in. But point being, I don't ever want to hear people critiquing athletes and coaches for speaking their mind, because it leads to more content, it's more fun, greater insight. It's just better when people aren't afraid to speak their mind. I mean, we all praise Derek Jeter because he never said anything too crazy with the Yankees. We praise Tom Brady for never saying anything too crazy with the Patriots. But how much better would it have been if Jeter gave you a little more access, a little more insight into what was going on in the locker room if you were a Yankee fan or even just a baseball fan in general? Same thing with the Patriots. I know Belichick sometimes will go on these long, give these long soliloquy answers about long snappers, punters, kickers, and, you know, Navy lacrosse, but he'll never give you anything about, you know, the current matchup that his New England team is playing against. So I think it's great that Sean Payton's speaking his mind. At the end of the day, this is July. They're in camp. He's making some headlines, okay. But, like, at the end of the day, what it's going to come down to is Russell Wilson needs to be able to play. And Sean Payton's been a pretty darn good, successful coach. Even, I think, really the times that it's shown was any time with the Saints that Breeze was injured toward the end, where he was injured a bunch, and they put in guys like Taysom Hill and Teddy Bridgewater, and they'd still win games. So I think that Sean Payton's doing right by his quarterback in defending him. He's trying to get more player personnel control by trying to get that GM out there. And for the fans and anyone out there who likes to watch the NFL, I think he's doing a good job by speaking his mind, because it gives us something interesting to talk about. And I like to hear it straight off the cuff, unfiltered. And I really appreciate that he's able to do that, because he feels confident in doing that. All right, Schloss Rant, live from the Philadelphia suburbs. Yankees, we're not going to get into them in this podcast here, other than saying that they've got a big three-game set over the weekend in Baltimore, and it's really important that they do well, because this team is in a pretty thick wild card race, very competitive. With the Mets, I mean, the series against the Mets, I mean, no surprise that they split. It's just two underachieving teams, especially with the Mets. 30 years after one of the worst Mets teams of all time, the book The Worst Team Money Can Buy About the 93 Mets, a book I read probably 15 years ago. So no surprise that Yankees and Mets split, because they're both just in different forms, just absolute hot messes, even though Yankees are doing, you know, much better than the Mets. All right, Schloss Rant Live, Philadelphia suburbs. Enjoy the weekend, everyone. Training camp is here for all these NFL teams. Did a little more NFL on this podcast versus Major League Baseball. But we'll see everyone out there. Be safe, whether it's at the beach, driving around, bouncing around, Giants camp, Jets camp, whatever it is. All right, Schloss Rant. We'll see you later, everyone.